Economic Development Committee meeting for Tuesday, July 5th, 2022, 6 p.m. We got Alderman Clancher, Alderman Hockel, Alderman Cook, President. Staff is here, and then we also have some participants on Zoom. So, first thing is citizens' comments. Does anybody mind?
If anybody wants to give citizens' comments that's online, please speak now.
Okay. Next item is minutes for correction and approval for May 3rd, 2022.
Good.
I'm good. Okay. New business. Item number one, EDC 2022-37, building permit reports for April and May 2022.
Okay. In April 2022, we issued 12 single family detached, 14 single family attached, and 1 townhome, a total of 133 permits. The vast majority of those were the single family homes and that, and then also like modifications, houses, fences, things like that. It's typical summer type projects. Next. And in May, we issued 22 single family homes, 140 total permits, and eight of those were commercial, the remainder were miscellaneous residential, lots and lots of decks. So that's the big hot thing right now, Terry.
Good. I assume we're good. All right. New business two, building inspection reports for April and May.
All right. In April, we ended up conducting 793 inspections for the month of April, and in May, we did 896 inspections. We kept as many as we possibly could in house, but we still are outsourcing the BNF on a regular basis.
Good job.
Yep.
Okay. New business three. Do these go on council agendas?
These are all informational.
Okay. NB3 property maintenance reports for April and May of 2022.
Okay. In April, we ended up hearing three cases before the hearing officer. Of those, two were for the lease of the main property that we've had numerous complaints about. Both of those were found liable and held for $1,000 fine.
Good job.
Yep.
Okay. New business four, economic development reports for May and June 2022.
So the reports for May and June are in your packet. Anyone has any questions? Or you've had a busy couple of months.
You good, Chris?
Yep.
Yep. All right. Excellent. New business five. Heads or tails dog grooming special use. And who?
That's me. So the petitioner, Kelly Holland, on behalf of David and Captain Pena, filed a special use authorization application for a commercial trade school for a dog grooming and care clinic in the M1 Limited Manufacturing District. This property is located at 181 Wolf Street, Unit C. And it is just, it's in Fox Industrial Park, just west of the city's Parks and Recreation building. Some quick information on the property. It's a multi-tenant structure with six separate units. This particular business is in the middle, Unit C. And it is all zoned M1. It's the entire Fox Industrial Park. Currently, the business is operating within the structure. As a commercial school, we allow those as special uses within the M1 district. There was an error back in the beginning of 2022, which permitted them outright, it was just a building permit when they came in for their commercial occupancy. So they are now, it's been made aware, so they are now going through the process for special use authorization. Within this memorandum, we kind of state how we define commercial schools within the zoning ordinance. But at our June plan council with the petitioner, they stated, as staff, we asked for more information regarding, what makes this a school and a commercial school use. And they stated, they are more of a commercial business, not really so much a commercial or trade school or technical school. So they are actually requesting to have dog grooming services become a special use in the M1. So they're requesting a text amendment. I'll follow that up in a little bit. This item will kind of go in two different directions. One, the merits of a text amendment allowing special use dog groomers as a special use in the M1, and it will go over this site-specific use as a special use. Real quick on the project, the parking seems to be in line. There's enough shared parking. Petitioner is providing that everybody in the owners in this area, there is enough shared parking in this particular location. Signage, there is signage up at on the building. If this business continues to stay there, they will get a building permit and a sign permit for that. So the two directions, and I'll quickly go over, staff did some research into text amendments allowing these types of uses in the M1 or manufacturing industrial districts. Overall, it's the purpose of our zoning code to separate dissimilar uses. The whole point of zoning is to provide similar uses next to each other without creating nuisances for the others, protecting public health and safety and general welfare. So when looking at potentially allowing a dog grooming service in the limited manufacturing districts, looking at our code right now, there are certain commercial uses that are outright permitted in the M1, and we also have some special uses permitted in the M1. So some outright permitted uses are pretty complementary to things you'd find in an industrial district: automobile repair, semi-truck repair, machine rentals, things like that. Some of the special uses, which require a public hearing process, daycare facilities, gas stations, retail stores, are things that could be on a case-by-case basis a good idea to have as in the M1 district. The reason typically, and some things to where commercial uses and manufacturing uses don't meet traffic generation types of, whereas commercial is going to be more pedestrian oriented, people park and other cars come in, whereas industrial uses are more, you come in the morning, you're working, you're not really seeing a lot of, residential traffic, but industrial areas have more truck traffic, more semi-trucks, loading, things like that. So we kind of put a list together of potential positive and negative outcomes to look at. Some potential positives, it would be reduced vacancies in industrial areas, could provide sales tax where otherwise it wouldn't be allowed, and could provide, services to nearby employers and industrial areas. Some negatives, like I said, the difference in truck traffic versus residential automobile traffic. While this particular user who submitted their business plan has a very small operation, it wouldn't stop larger operations if we permitted special uses in the M1 throughout the city from applying for authorization. So those are just some things to think about. We also compiled a list of how some other neighboring municipalities handle these types of uses. Oswego and Montgomery and Sugar Grove allow them in special uses in some of their manufacturing industrial districts. Plainfield and Plano do not permit them, and Aurora allows them outright. We contacted staff over at these cities. We didn't get any generation onto specific problems that they've caused. So just some of the research to kind of give you some background on if we want to pursue a text amendment to allow this type of use as a special use. And then real quickly, I'll try and go into just the site-specific potential for heads or tails dog grooming. It's a low-intensity pet care service. They submitted their business plan within there. They've been operating there since January. There are specific special use standards they have to meet. One of the biggest issues is safety concerns. With it being next to the Parks and Recreation building, There have been, we've gotten comments from park staff saying that a lot of times, because it has the one access point, people will park by the parks building, get out with their dog, walk around the site, they can't really find the the entrance to Heads or Tails. And with the big trucks coming in and out, that's a loading area for them in the south there. It's a very active site for the Parks Department. They're just very worried about people walking around with their dogs, while they're driving around. The petitioner did state that their regular customers now know where it is. There's less incidents of that. But Parks Department still fears those conflicts that exist. And the first clause in the special use standards is about providing safety and making sure it's not detrimental to the area. So that's one concern for this site specifically. The comprehensive plan calls this area for general industrial use, which is exactly like it sounds. It's mainly used for large or enclosed or storage areas or manufacturing. While this is clearly a destination commercial use, is defined by the comprehensive plan, which is more auto-oriented services and businesses. Again, if there was a text amendment, and this guy where it says, if there was a text amendment and we say this type of commercial service is adequate and we keep up the industrial area's integrity and overall vision for that area, it could align with either one of those. It's a little bit of both. So in general, staff is just seeking input from EDC on both. One, do we want to pursue a text amendment to the zoning ordinance to allow dog grooming services as a special use in the M1? And two, specifically for Heads or Tails dog grooming, is this an adequate site that would meet the special use authorization process? And we did put in Parks and Recreation specifically for specific items that they were concerned about, and that's in your memorandum as well.
Does the petitioner have anything they'd like to add first?
If the petitioner is online, if you'd like to speak, you may.
And I believe, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I think Jason did an excellent job summarizing, and how this came about was, I believe staff was attempting to work with the petitioner. They are still planning on doing some educational classes and tech classes, but their primary business is dog grooming. And as staff can say, it is a pretty low intense dog grooming business. They do have two groomers there at all times. I believe they're attempting to mitigate completely the issue with the Parks Department. When they first opened up, they did put up a temporary sign without a permit in front of the Parks Department. And a lot of their customers are going in, what I think staff believes is the incorrect entrance around the back of the Parks Department building and to the location. They do primarily have repeat customers. They do not accept walk-ins. Their client base has been educated now, the signs have been removed. Don't go in that way. Come in the northern entrance. But we believe that the text amendment with the special use, and I believe my clients are in agreement with the conditions that staff has kind of laid out, if we're going to go that route, would be the best option, so that they could operate primarily as a dog grooming business as opposed to a technical school.
Okay, Chris?
Two initial questions. One, there was a comment made that there was an error initially when this was approved. Can we elaborate on that?
Staff member reviewing the permit made an interpretation that we disagreed with later.
Okay. So that was on the use or the, what was the item that was disagreed on?
Basically the interpretation of it being allowed in that code. So we were double checking some things unrelated to this project after the fact, and this popped up. and so we identified that as a problem potentially in the future for the petitioner and wanted to make sure that it was addressed now.
Second part for my initial question, is this an owned or leased space?
Good question.
It's a leased space, correct, Kelly?
It's actually the petitioner, the owner of the dog grooming business, her parents own the property. So it is technically leased, but I can't say for sure whether or not they are paying.
Okay.
I'm assuming they are, but I actually have not asked that specific question.
I know, just to follow up, I have a lot of concerns. I know the park's building there and that's tight. And I kind of agree with what they're saying here about it could, some bad things could happen with the trucks going in and out and loaders. And when I heard about it, I was a little surprised that that's where it got put.
And staff actually did have a very good suggestion because there is access on both sides of the building that we could designate parking on the north side of the building, we believe, away from the parks and recs to minimize any traffic concerns.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, it's one entrance in, right?
Yeah.
And then it breaks off, so you have to come in the one entrance, and that's right in front of the parks building, I believe. And you got to go around the back side of it, right?
I can pull it up.
That's correct.
So staff's recommendation, just jump in a little bit. Staff's recommendation is not to recommend this as a special use for a commercial trade because it's not. So that's why the code is currently written that it can only be there if it's a commercial trade school. So our recommendation is not to do that. The fallback to that is to allow dog grooming as a special use in the M1 district under certain circumstances. And those circumstances are laid out in staff's recommendation. So, for instance, the access, they would have to provide directional signage so that those coming for heads or tails are to route only around the northern part of the site and go directly to the parking. So they can accomplish that with two or three on-site directional traffic signs that are less than 4 square feet. And then other traffic can then be directed toward the southern part to the other users so that trucks, that the potential for conflict is lessened.
So are you going to tell the parks guys how they got to route their trucks?
No, we're telling the people that are coming to the dog grooming where to route to go to the dog
grooming. There's going to be no confusion, guaranteed.
There's no guarantee. That's why traffic signals are all over town. No guarantee that people.
But I know this is in the back corner, stuff in the back corner, so I know how congested it is.
Correct. But the petitioner does have the ability, because they're going to be dealing with their clients, so this isn't like a convenience use where you're having, you know, people just drive by and say, oh, let me just go to the dog groomers. They can give information on how to circulate the site to their clients before arrival.
So, who owns the access coming in? Is it city property, or is it second piece of property?
I don't know. Do you guys know?
I know the parking lot in front of their unit is not owned by the city. I believe the entrance, that entire parcel is owned by the city. But
right.
Kelly, can you provide more information?
I would have to check the plat, but I know when, I think it was Betzweiler's, were developing that area, there was cross access. There's a cross access easement agreement.
That's yes. Probably right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I would say there's an
easement. That would make sense.
If there wasn't a recorded cross access easement, that would be difficult. But I did think that the city owned more of that.
Yeah, you pull straight into the parks, right?
Let's see what this is. Our code would require a cross access easement because then that lot would be landlocked.
City owns the property
surrounding it all
on the east, where the entrance comes in, and then the properties to the west, the parking lot and then the structure are owned by, each action unit is parceled out and owned by a different person. But the parking lot is owned by one person, but we own everything for the city.
So that the petitioner has agreed to provide us with language for access and for parking, for the shared parking of the different units on site.
So this is one. I understand we own the lot. We basically created somewhat of a burden in terms of Park and Rec's objections to this use on the second building. From the point of view that us owning that property creates traffic headaches. Okay? And I get this is an odd piece because it doesn't have direct access. It goes through a secondary parcel. So I'm not 100% in line with us as a city saying, well, we don't like you using this space because we created a problem. But then also, due diligence and proper vetting of the property should embrace the fact that it's not a permitted use in this area. I agree with staff on the fact that a special use is not something that I want to have pursued on this piece of property. And honestly, I'm not really in favor of a text amendment for this either. These codes are currently being reviewed, but this is one that I don't really see any benefit to the text amendment for this one. Joe?
Yeah, because where do we have M1 just there? And then pretty much Elderman, correct?
Yes, the site, all of that is zoned.
Yeah, I know that whole. But I'm saying there isn't really any other.
So we have in the past let schools go into M1 zoning areas. If you recall, we had Grace Holistic School, which had, you know, some concerns about traffic and because of the bus service. And there was a just recently other
seal.
Seal
is a special permitted special use for 2019.
Yeah. Correct.
All that is like, you know, portions of.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. We're getting on it.
Wrigley is probably on one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So although the other two schools were not commercial, we do allow a different type of commercial use in the M1 as a special use.
Right.
Those are the gym. So we had the CrossFit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But those are more up toward the front of the...
It wasn't specific in the fact that we allowed it as a special use. So it doesn't matter. In the M1, they can locate where this particular dog room is. It's an identified special use.
Actually, the health and safety clubs are already permitted in the M1.
They don't have dogs.
Hmm?
They don't have dogs.
Yeah, I'm more concerned with the danger of it. So
this is where a special use each case is per individually. So
I wish we would have solved this to begin with earlier in the process instead of now.
I guess I'm not really against the text amendment, but I'm probably not in favor of it right there.
No.
But the text amendment amends the language.
To allow,
but then they'd still have to come in front of us to do it. Like, if it was, like, closer and more by itself, I wouldn't necessarily be against it.
Or if you had the property north of there, if that's a roadway that they could come in that way and in and out, they could bypass this Parks and Rec entrance. I don't know how that's probably possible, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you'd have to purchase property from this landowner, get the proper easements, do the improvements.
Because that would allow you to do it without. Where do we?
Yeah. So, Christy, walk us through the options and what you just heard with input from where we're going.
So, you have two options. They have petitioned to allow them to be designated as a school or trade. So, obviously, it seems like that is not the path, and that is not the path. development services are a identified special use in the M1, and then you can create special criteria, or you can just do it on a case-by-case basis. Or your third option is to do nothing, and then the petitioner would then have to relocate.
How long do they have to relocate?
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, you're in opposition to the zoning code right away,
correct.
So the enforcement mechanism is
right.
Basically circuit court at that point, going through.
Well, the enforcement mechanism is to pull their occupancy
permit.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, we caught this after the fact. I'd hate to say no, and then tomorrow you better be gone.
That's why I asked the question, because this is something that we bear some responsibility for this.
Which... there could be a time frame, I think, to resolve it. I mean, it doesn't have to be tomorrow, since they're already there.
And I do not want to be an antagonist to a business, but I'm changing the code for something that they thought was permissible. We have fault, but then we call it the issue, now we have to make a decision. Are we going to hold to what the code is, or are we going to change it and require them to come through? So that's generally, I'm not in favor of making a change for this. So I struggle. But then on our the other side, we have an error.
Right.
We caught it after the fact.
So let me see if I can boil down the conversation. So you've already said you're not in favor of a text amendment. Yeah, you said you're open to it, but you might not think the location is right. That's part of the process.
Right.
I'm like Joe and I.
Okay. So there's only three people here. Technically, to move things out of committee, you need three affirmative votes, although this one is an active land use application.
Correct.
Even though we don't have a text amendment that goes with it per se, if this was allowed, what would be the next step in the process land use wise?
So they still do have the ability to go before PCC.
Okay.
Okay. Under the current classification as a school or trade.
Okay, and then the city council has to ratify or deny that after it's recommended. So the process is in place. You could say, this is our input, and let the process stay its court if you wish. So.
Yeah. No, we have negative recommendations from various departments.
Right.
Right.
So
let the process play out, right?
I mean, what I see it is it doesn't move out of committee, but the process still proceeds.
Okay.
Right.
And we have two text amendments are probably okay, one that it's not, and we'll see what the PCC and the city council says. So.
Works for me.
And if everybody says that it's okay, there's still additional steps that have to be followed via initiating the code amendment and all these other things. So, yeah.
So staff,
lots of discussions still yet to be had.
Okay. Do you want to have them pursue the current special use then revisit the text amendment, or do you want staff to pursue?
Well, they basically just said that they're not a school. Occasionally,
right.
They are.
Sure, business, yeah.
So it would have to be under the text amendment. Can we just push the text amendment to the rest of the council?
You can, yeah. I mean, you can do anything you want. It's just the city council's code says three positive votes are needed
right.
To technically move things out of committee. So, you know, the loophole around that, as you know, is two of you vote for it, one of you votes against it, the other two either get the mayor's consent or two additional people
right.
To put it on the next agenda, or Chris consents to move it out with a neutral recommendation. So.
I mean, I don't really have enough information for my thing, but I'm not against it. I don't want to...
Sure, we've gone through text amendment processes on that, especially if we were working through different votes.
We also have rules, so I'm in favor for the text amendment, at least pursuing it.
I agree with Chris.
All right. I guess it dies.
Okay.
I'm fine with that, too.
So it sits here for now. The PZC meeting still occurs based on our land use petition process. Okay. It's just the action coming out of committee is that you don't recommend the text amendment or the special use process for now. So. Okay.
Fine with that.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chris. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Okay, new business 6, comprehensive plan amendment, Brinklage.
Yep. This is me again. A little bit easier.
So in April of this year, there was a rezoning approved for the Bricolage Wellness. This is the property north of 120, at the southeast corner of 126 and 71. It was rezoned out of the Windmill Farms PUD to the E3 General Business District, which was consistent with the trends at the time. Overall, the 2016 comprehensive plan called for this area to be a state conservation residential, which was a future land use designation that was more so for large lots, detached housing. It was also considered the city's holding pattern, as most of this was on the outskirts of town, and the comprehensive plan more so focused on the core parts of town, the subdivisions that weren't developed yet. The comprehensive plan has a 10-year horizon, and seeking out that our planning boundary goes almost a mile and a half away, a lot of these areas that are in state conservation would not see development over the horizon of the plan. So due to this rezoning, though, the trend of development changed. Things have to be evaluated. It is a fluid document. So staff is proposing an update to our comprehensive plan. Anytime we make a change like that, a land use change or rezoning like that, we evaluate how that changes the comprehensive plan. We listed out in 2020, we kind of did a batch of five that we have done. And to stay on top of it, we're kind of just going case by case basis every time we change kind of what the future calls for. So this is just an amendment proposal to add that particular parcel for a what's called destination commercial, which is auto-oriented commercial businesses, retail services, and things like that, which the Bricolage Wellness now encapsulates much better. So it would just add one more map to the existing addendum for the future land use map, and this is going to go to public hearing next week in front of PZC, Quebec City Council, so we are just seeking any guidance from EDC.
Joe?
Yeah, I'm fine.
So, we're good.
No dog driven crap.
New Business 7, ordinance approving agreement between Raging Waves and Utility Union, right?
All right, so Raging Waves approached us a few weeks ago, says that they have been studying their options for employee parking, which has moved around frequently on the site and off the site as different properties surrounding them have been farmed or redeveloped or needed for different purposes. Their most recent operational plan has the employee entrance on the east end of their property, so it's the back end. And so they're butting up against a farm field, which is technically part of our Raymond Regional Stormwater Detention Basin that we coined in the mid-2000s when we were sure that everything between here and Sugar Grove and Montgomery was going to be developed into giant shopping malls. And could then be built as such, having off-site detention. Since then, obviously, development has slowed down. There isn't really a need for that large of a detention basin. The detention basin that's on site north of Galena already properly serves Bristol Bay, and the detention south, if that area ever develops, could be redesigned if needed. So the city does have an existing valid easement over almost 200 acres on that property for detention basin. This is a sliver of that. So there's a diagram in the packet that they've come to an agreement with the underlying property owner, so the guy that owns the property below our easement, basically. They've agreed to terms, and so they came to us and asked for permission, basically, to waive our rights to the easement, at least as it relates to their ability to park there, and then use that for employee parking. The second part of that, which is contained within the ordinance, is that they do want to do gravel parking for the entire thing, which is not permitted by code. We felt that it was reasonable based on, it's Raging Waves. It's only going to be used for a few months during the year, even though it's not allowed. We've told people no elsewhere. We were trying to be business friendly, and so we've drafted the ordinance that way. Obviously, if the city council disagrees, we can tell them to pave it and go the other way. But that's the essence of the request, and I'm happy to take your questions.
So, first on the agreement, the term new owner, is that used just for the fact that they purchased it after the O'Keefe's? That's why
I believe so. I'm trying to find
it. I find it a little strange, the terminology, so that's all. Yeah, it is a defined term.
Which page are you looking at?
It's on page,
the new owner. Okay, I see.
Yeah, yep. That's repeated throughout.
Yeah, that was Kathy's nomenclature for, you know, the new owner.
Okay. The document number that's referenced on page 178 of the PDF under the recitals, the 2009 document, wouldn't pull up under the county records.
Oh.
So I wasn't able to pull that up in advance because I wanted to confer, because when we go to page 179, now therefore number two, to talk about the gravel. My stance has been that if it's a development within the city, it needs to be paved. I've always taken that position. This one, the way that the number two is written, stipulates that it's something based upon requirements of the easement. If that is the case, which I haven't been able to confirm, I would be accepting of it for the basis that it is a condition of the easement. And while it's annexed into the city, it's part of it. I would not be opposed to allowing it since it is a seasonal use, temporary use. Talking with the owner, the part that is on the property, which is going to be used for truck turnarounds and emergency general access, is actually up to the property line. So this being the limited use area, I would be okay with that. But I would like to confirm that with the easement agreement.
Okay.
There are restrictions on it.
Okay.
Because then that gives me comfort to say I don't want to pursue requirement in this payment.
Okay. So you're referencing which paragraph of the ordinance?
Number two on page 179.
Okay.
It talks about the 3 points that are in there. The three points.
So I read that as simply that we're permitting them to use gravel instead of asphalt, but they can only use it for employee vehicles and they can't use the general public there. So I don't know if the easement document says that anything has to be asphalt versus gravel as much as our underlying city code requires it to be asphalt.
Right, and I just want to confirm if there is something that does or does not preclude that, because there was a point I read in here.
Precludes the gravel part of it or the whole thing?
Precludes anything permanent on that easement.
Okay, so that's more in the machinations of Kathy's trying to make sure that we still have the ability to do something permanently within the easement. And protecting our development of that versus anything that's in the easement agreement. So the easement agreement isn't dictating it as much as we're trying to say, we still want the easement, we still want to be able to do something, you can't put anything permanent there, you know.
Right.
So we can get you a copy of the easement document though, if that'll help.
Yeah, I would like to see that one.
Okay.
Generally, I don't have an issue with this. It makes sense. It is going to help them with their circulation, something that working through with their access that gets them off of the gravel, or I'm sorry, the grass paved area.
I would consider another part more grass, right?
Yeah. So it does keep them on their property with the exception of this access.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine with them.
I'm fine with them too.
Okay.
Good Chris, what he wants. And then,
yep.
Where does this need to go next?
This will go straight to City Council,
okay.
If you're recommending it.
I have Chris's information.
Okay.
New business 8, Yorkville Self-Storage, 1602 North Bridge Street variance.
Right. Dave Cordray, on behalf of the ownership group, Yorkville Self-Storage at 1602 North Bridge, is seeking variance approval for the temporary storage units to become permanent accessory structures on the lot, which would be closer to the public right-of-way and expanding that for So this is the storage units just south of the Dunkin' Donuts and north of the Arby's. I'll give you a quick property background. The current zoning classification for the property is B3 general business. It was annexed into the city in 79. Those three existing permanent storage structures were built in 88. And then originally there was also an 88, the oil and tire shop there that burned down, was demolished in 2006. And that area was never redeveloped. That is currently where the temporary storage units are at the moment. When this was originally constructed in 88, public storage facilities were permitted in the B3 district. And then when the code was updated in the early 2000s, they were then taken out of that classification and made special uses in the M1 and M2 districts. Therefore, the existing use is a legally non-conforming use and is just subject to our non-conforming standards. They're allowed to continue their operation as long as they follow those standards. So a little background on the temporary storage units. In the spring of 2021, the owner applied to put these temporary units up due to high demand in the area, and it was the idea that they could put them down. You know, they own different storage units, storage facilities throughout the country. When demand is low here, they can pick them up and move them and kind of have more of that as opposed to building a permanent structure. The irregular shape of the lot, the flag lot, created some required front yards and side yards that left a lot of buildable area in the front there where the old oil and tire shop was. So they were given in the spring a building permit to put up 38 temporary storage units. They did not put them up until the fall, and when they did, the layout was inconsistent with what they had submitted. It was in the required side yards. It was bumping up against the required front yards. So their building permit was revoked until it met the standards of what was submitted with their application. It was then later reinstated. They moved them around. They put them to make them consistent with the plan that was submitted with their building permit application, and it was reinstated January 31st of this year. On a temporary basis, which was, they were allowed 6 months of use. They had to maintain two off-street parking spaces, and at the end of their 6 months, they could apply for a variance. This is them applying for that variance. July 31st is the end date for their building permit application. So they are requesting to vary the zoning ordinance in two ways. The accessory, they would then, if they became permanent, they would be considered accessory structures. Within our accessory structure code, 10.5, 10.35C, structures can't be closer than 10 feet to the primary structure or closer to the public right-of-way. So since this is a flag lot, these would be closer than the principal buildings in the rear. And then finally, you're not allowed to conform. You're not allowed to expand a non-conforming use or structure. So if these become permanent, you are now expanding this non-conforming use. The variation standards were given as well in the memorandum, looking at our comprehensive plan. This again kind of falls into a middle area. This area is planned for destination commercial. It's along 47 and those areas there are meant for 47 Veterans Parkway to see destination commercial, auto-oriented commercial businesses. Within our comprehensive plan, we state the features of this should have higher quality building design, landscaping requirements, and buffers. But you know, also public, many of the public storage warehouses facilities kind of fit into the general industrial district as well. Which is why they're more aligned with our M1 and M2 districts. That's why their special use is there. Since it's kind of in the middle ground, if you know there was an increase in landscaping or buffering between some of the uses, it could be a little more consistent with the destination commercial, so it's not necessarily one or the other. In terms of our comments on them, We did some evaluation on our other storage facilities in the area. The request to add these was more so from keeping up and not falling to obsolescence with their size. A lot of the other storage facilities in the area have more units, per acre. And this was a way for them to keep up with demand in the area. So if permitted, and if going through the variance, staff recommends three separate conditions to their variance. The first is it must be consistent with the layout of the units as they are now. There was submitted a plan, there's actually 34 units up there now. The original owner got some different sizes, that's why he originally laid them out differently. They're not all within the buildable area, none of them encroach on any of the required yards. They're fairly consistent with the original building plan. When they move to their public hearing, then we'll submit an official site plan that'll show that. Number two is we're requesting an 8'5" privacy fence to install the rear area to provide buffering to the commercial uses behind there. At a certain point in time, some of the units got put behind there, so we are asking for that kind of buffering. And finally, we are asking for landscaping in the front yard consistent with our buffer standards and our landscape plans. So those are three conditions if the variance were approved that staff would recommend be tied to the variance. David Cornwright is here if you have any questions for him. And staff is just seeking input on the request, and it will look like it will be going to an August public hearing.
Good evening. Committeeman, staff, admin. My name is David Cortright. I represent the owner of real property at 1602 North Bridge Street, operating as Yorkville Self Storage. The application that we are seeking for variance was aptly analyzed by staff. Thank you. I think the one distinguishing fact about this parcel, which makes the variance necessary and appropriate, is the flag-shaped nature of the lot. We're oriented to the north, which does not face the typical frontage of the surrounding lots facing Illinois Route 47. So really the only other land which is able to house anything is all considered closer to the right. So effectively, without the variance, the property is unexpandable, unbuildable. All the land, which is currently in that longer portion of the L shape, that flag shape. I am happy to speak to any concerns. I don't know that I can offer more information on your specific concerns.
I'm not really in favor of it, but you can go first.
Well, I mean, I'm not either, and I didn't like the way the whole thing shook out to begin with. They drew them down, and then it was like, never even told us, and then I had lots of people complaining about it. They go, you're going to let them do that? And I'm like, I didn't even know they were going to do it. So now they want a variance. It's sort of like, do it and then ask for forgiveness. That's the same. That's how I feel.
I'll agree with that.
I'm not in favor of asking for forgiveness after the fact. There are other uses that would be acceptable on this frontage of the flag lot, but the conversion of temporary units to an accessory structure in the front yard, it doesn't sit well with me. There's a lot that would have to be done in terms of landscaping, screening, architectural standards. I mean, everything that staff pointed out is deficient here. So this is not something that I would be willing to accommodate by any means.
And I would just add one other thing. We were pretty hard on other storage units in town, making sure they did, remember all the other...
The one up north?
Yep. The one down on the south side, too.
Absolutely. Screening, fencing, everything.
Yeah.
And then, does the petitioner know, are the extra units still sitting at the east side of the property, or have those been removed?
They've been removed.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
So this is similar to the dog groomer petition in that it is scheduled for a public hearing.
Correct.
At the August plan PCC.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So again, you have the same comments here. We can allow the process to continue forward, given your feedback.
But that would, the planning and zoning will get three no's out of committee, right? They'll know that we...
Yes, they will be part of the packet. So
they'll probably get more notice in the city council meeting later, too.
Yeah.
Business 9, Bristol Bay Units 10 and 12, proposed final plat approval.
Okay, so Bristol Bay, I'm familiar with that. They are moving forward as the new owner Troy continues to final plat the remaining units of the development. This request is for Unit 10, which will have 119 multi-family townhome units. That is a reduction of 19 units from the previously approved plat in 2006, which was never recorded. And then Unit 12 is proposing to have 60 multifamily townhome units, and that is a reduction of 8 units. The reason for the reduction in units has to do with the product type. The previous petitioner, previous developer was Syntex. They had a different product type. Their product type tended to be more of the 4 to 5 to 5 to 6 units. This particular developer was looking at a 5 to 6 type of style building. Offering actually larger lots than the previous developer had proposed. The previous developer proposed an average lot size between about 1,000 and 1,700 square feet, where this petitioner is proposing ranging between 1,300 and 1,700 square feet. Additionally, the petitioner provided feedback to the city with initial looks at their elevation. Just to kind of ask us what we thought of their product, and then we in turn provided feedback to them in regards to some things we'd like to see in the elevations, which the petitioner did take in advisement and added to their elevations. So you'll note that they did incorporate some transom windows on some of the center units of the front doors, shake style siding on a quarter of the side elevations that face the street, and then dormers with contrast color on the rear elevations. Staff did kind of do an analysis for you on page 5 of the packet, which talks about the reduction and how that affects the overall density of Bristol Bay. Again, similar to Unit 13, where there was a reduction, only a change about 1%. So the overall makeup of the residential and the townhome development did not change significantly. Just a note, just kind of revenue, we would, by losing those lots, we'd be losing about $440,000 of building permit revenue. And there it's laid out for you with the reduction of those total 27 lots. The petitioner is here tonight, Troy Mark, so he has anything to add, but this would then move forward to PCC, not as a public hearing, just as a public meeting.
Good evening, just here to answer any questions. My name is Troy Mertz, and I've been in front of the committee before, so thanks again for your time tonight. Are you?
I'm fine with that.
I'm fine, Chris.
Yeah, I like the reduction of units. And to be, well, this is my board, I have to say. The architectural standards, if I recall from the annexation agreement, they were limited, but we are in agreement.
Yes.
Petitioners in agreement with staff in terms of what those expectations are and
correct.
Staff.
Yes, and they do exceed, meet or exceed, depending on what we
have. Nice. It's good to see something updated from one of those. So, the only thing I'm going to say on this one is we're moving forward the final plat on this area. Rosen Winkle is going to become even more congested and more challenging. It's the only point of ingress, egress for entire subdivision, and it will become much more difficult. city has an obligation for Route 47 stoplight. We're going to have to bite the bullet sooner than later, probably before IDOT actually gets off their rear and does the work for the improvements. I know that we were hedging on that so that IDOT would pay the bulk of that, or almost all of it. But before this thing gets out of hand and we only have one access, we are going to have to do something. Whether we petition for a right and right out on Route 47, we're going to have to do something.
You're talking about an entrance toward the north.
Well, the west side.
There's, yeah, west, northwest.
There's a drive that.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's stuffed right now. So just,
yeah. And that is our obligation to do.
And the county has reached out, IDOT's reached out to me in regard to take notice on the property. So they're planning on the wider part at least. So
there, yeah.
Yeah. That, the actual work is a long ways away. And I know you're moving around already out there. So the ones that have already been approved, we're going to have permits pulling here soon. So this neighborhood will continue to get more congested. So I heard it from the residents. I know it from personally driving my kids up there at school every so often for 6 years. This was always a challenge and it'll become more of a challenge.
Okay, makes sense.
That's it. That's all I have.
Okay, and that goes to council.
Yes.
It goes to PCC and city council.
All right, but no public hearing.
All right. Okay, new business number 10, Wyandotte Ridge, Unit 2, final plat.
That's it?
Was
that 10 and 12? Or did I only hear 10?
10 and 12.
It was both.
It was 10 and 12. Okay. Wait, I need 12.
Okay. No, they're both bad.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
This is another final plat for another development that is closing out in the city. This is Wyandotte Ridge. This is the final plat for Unit 2. If you recall, Wyandotte Ridge had three components to it. It had a commercial, it had a single family, Unit 1, and then there was Unit 2. And also, there was a town's development, which was separate from Wyandotte Ridge. It was towns of Wyandotte Ridge. Part of that, towns of Wyandotte Ridge, was to have a sanitary lift station for the site, and that was to occur upon the construction of the towns, which then would allow for the construction of the Unit 2. Unit 2 was supposed to have 16 residential lots. Well, because of the downturn and the separate owners now owning the town's parcel, which is not going to move forward, the current developer, Cal Atlantic, would like to just move forward and close out the Wyandotte Ridge. So they have replatted Unit 2 to include 12 single-family homes and on-site detention, because again, the towns were supposed to accommodate that on-site detention. As part of the lift station, they are required to give design related to the appearance of how it's going to be within the community. They have provided images, cut sheets, and staff has reviewed them, made comments. They are looking to move forward. They've already responded to those comments subsequent to this memo going out. We are looking forward to having them before our August EDC, so PCC, so it'll go for August 10th and then August 23rd at City Council. We are still reviewing the landscape plan comments, but the petitioner is here to address any concerns, but this is pretty much a straightforward subdivision.
So this parcel still requires the lift station.
Yep.
They're going to put that in for the 12 and provide their own stormwater.
Correct.
They're paying 100% of the lift station and will convey it to the city.
I had asked Bart that earlier.
Yes, they are. That was part of the agreement that we did.
The agreement.
Well, the amended agreement in 2013, I believe.
And for 12 lots, they're willing to do that. Now, this will then in turn serve the towns, the area to the south. So, future development comes in, this lift station accommodates.
I don't know if that is the petitioner is online. I think the way that the ordinance was written that they would only accommodate the site.
That's
but
sure.
Can the petitioner respond, John? Are you online?
Hi there. I'm
Madeline
Armin. I'm the engineer representing Lennar here today. but I believe you were asking if the lift station serves more than the 12 lots. No, it is not currently designed to serve any more than the 12 lots because the area to the south is actually lower than our site. So the only reason we need this lift station is so that we can actually pump it north since we are unable to control our destiny to the south.
How much is this going to cost us to operate and maintain for 12 lots?
I don't think that we've calculated that figure yet.
How big is the pipe and the pumps?
Madeline? I'm sorry, what did you say?
How big is the pumps?
How big are the pumps?
Yeah.
I can get back to you with that exact size.
And pipe two then, probably.
Well, if I know it says the pipe and the pumps. So it looks like there's just two of them submerged. They don't look like they're that big, but I can't see any of them.
So the engineer is requiring them to provide information in regards to the operation and maintenance of it, OEM. Yeah. So I think the petitioner, if they don't have it right now, will have to provide it to the city so that we know what the continuing operation costs would be.
So back to what Chris was saying, theoretically though, if that ever did develop down there then, if this lift station only takes care of unit two, what will they do at this point down here?
They would have to accommodate on their side their needs for sanitary sewer and stuff.
So they would have to put probably another lift station at some point down there too then? Is that?
I don't know.
Probably.
Yes.
And I
or do a regional system.
Right. That means they
have
to do
something. To that.
I'll have to go back and check the notes on the conversation from a few years ago, but I recall that there was some sort of economy of scale between what's being constructed here and what might have to be constructed on the south. So I thought that they were sizing it appropriately to be able to address everything else, but it might just be that, you know, there might be infrastructure and easement and stuff that would allow that to occur.
So,
rather than
yeah, originally, the towns was supposed to be constructed to accommodate the townhome development as well as the single family, potentially the other development, Hudson Links. But because that never happened, when we amended the agreement in 2013, the developer was only required, because they did not own that other parcel for the town development, was only required to do what was necessary to construct their
I'm just curious. I mean, not that that's probably developed.
It's only stormwater and 12 lots. Can't be that big of a lift station.
So one clarification I can offer is, based on topography and available infrastructure south of that property, there could be a scenario where the current small lift station, if you guys wanted to in the future, could be abandoned, obviously, and then the sanitary could follow topography south.
That sounds right. Mm-hmm. Yes, that rings a bell.
Can you, because I can wrap around to the Christian High School.
Right. Yeah, that's what it was.
Right.
It was
I'm looking at
the small pump station that they're going to build for this site will basically be abandoned and they'll replace it with a larger pump station further down down the hill, basically, whenever that other property develops. So, and then they'll use basically the easements and the, you know, the lines and the infrastructure as like a conduit. So.
Okay.
But this is, because Plano has this problem. They have a temporary one behind Walmart that is still just temporary and very undersized. So this is sized like it could be in, definitely handle it.
That was the intention of this, and it's a permanent structure.
Okay.
So they're building an actual building around this to blend in with the actual home.
Yeah, they get 2 feet into the
Is that going to be on the stormwater lot? Or is that going to be I think it is. It's on the out parcel in the west side of Windebridge Road, so.
The lift station is just south of the cul-de-sac. And then the structure containing the generator is within the right-of-way just west of the cul-de-sac.
been contemplated fits. If anything develops to the south,
if ever develops, this one.
We'll have responsibility for maintenance. I assume there's going to be a 1-year warranty period or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
This thing before we accept it. When
yes,
will we take it?
Yes, they're bonding for it, and we will require a 1-year maintenance.
And EEI is involved in this, right?
Now, do we take that as soon as it's built, or will that be after the last one it's built out? When do we take it?
Whenever the unit itself is accepted.
Okay, so it's got to be
warranty period.
So they may never build any units out here potentially, but we'll take that on as soon as it's approved by.
Yeah, the standard clause is 75% completion, so they would have to complete 8 or 9 out of 12 homes.
Okay.
Yeah,
everything's good then. Joe?
I'm fine with it.
Chris?
Good.
All right. Pretty good.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. I just want to clarify though. The structure is within an easement within that outlot, not within the actual right of way. I'm not going to remember all that, but the lift station is in the right of way just south of the cul-de-sac pole.
It's right here. 30 feet.
Okay.
The landscape plan shows more.
All right, new business 11, Graham C. Stores, rezoning, special use, sign variance, final.
Okay.
So just to recap that last one, it goes to PZC and then
the
City Council. Okay.
And then City Council.
Yep.
Okay.
Graham C. Store, gas station requires a special use. They are rezoning the property currently is manufacturing and rezoning to B3. They are asking for a sign. The height of the sign that they are requesting is larger than what the code permits. A portion of this is due to state requirements, but also because of their branding. Staff did kind of an assessment, if you will, of all the other recently approved and existing gas stations that are nearby. And it just shows that they're kind of in line with what the variance request is. They may be a little bit larger. By 5 square feet, and just sort of okay, right, key corner to it, but they're consistent with the request for gas stations to have larger monument-type signs. And finally, their final plat of the site, because the site will now have not only the lot for the gas station, but it'll have a detention basin, as well as a future outlot for a commercial user. In the packet, you'll see elevations of the building, as well as the proposed sign. This will also go to Planning and Zoning Commission. It was originally scheduled for the July Planning and Zoning, but we have rescheduled it with the request of the petitioner to the August Planning and Zoning Commission, and you will be able to comment there as well if you have any additional feedback from staff's review.
I'll go first, I guess. So they're putting one sign up for the whole properties.
For their monument.
One sign.
On and, their lot.
Okay, versus across the street, the Shell has two signs. So if you combine the area of both Shell signs, is it about the same as this?
No, but
this is still bigger?
If you combine both of the Shell, because Shell is allowed to have a 20 square foot sign.
Right.
So if you add that, that's 40 square feet. They're only asking.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because if you're only talking one sign versus two signs, then it makes a different ballgame.
I was
sign
talking
one,
height when I said 20 and 25.
Yeah, that's right.
But the square foot, so the Shell is granted 129 square feet.
Times two.
That's
one.
So it's one on each side, 147, 171. This one is proposed at 168 square feet.
But one spot.
Yes.
Location. They're just going
just
right. Is that for sure?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just one side. Right.
And this commercial lot, will they're not going to come ask us for a sign, are they?
They have the ability to ask for a sign.
Oh, I thought they had to use, I thought they had to share this sign.
No, no, this sign is only for the gas station lot, but the future lot that would develop would have the ability to have their own sign as well.
Okay, because I was thinking, like, you know, we had the panels and...
They're separate lots. I mean, they may do that, but they have the ability per the code to have their own monument sign as well.
Within the code, until they ask us otherwise.
Correct, correct.
Their goal is to find, like, another user, like fast food or something like that. So they would get their own identity. They would sell that lot, and then that user would have their own sign.
Just like the McDonald's.
So we should figure there's another sign coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when we did this, I thought they were going to share a sign. That's how it read on me. But.
Good clarification on the number of signs on the BP lot. Are they allowed to put up more than one sign if it's a certain size?
Sure, they can.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, if they have a certain frontage.
Okay. So does that bother you if they ask for the variance and then they come in and then they put a secondary sign up that's within code?
And then turn on Shell, turn around and want to make bigger signs on theirs. That's what I'm worried about.
I don't know what they're going to do, but
I mean,
sure.
I'm trying to balance it.
Wait a second. So what we have in front of us is not a, or is the complete signage package, or is not the complete signage package?
It is the complete signage package for Grand C Store.
Okay. So will they be asking for additional signs?
So my question is, a dovetail of that is, without asking us for future permission, would they be allowed to put up a second sign that is of...
They could.
Of not same
that's
size?
Not of that size.
But of conforming
yep.
size.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question, and this is based on some not necessarily hypotheticals, true hypotheticals, but as Christy and Steph and I do know, the UDO has been going forward. We spent an awful lot of time on signs.
Oh my God.
How does this conform to what was discussed for commercial signs?
Because we do not have a finalized direction from the UDO, I cannot say. But what I can say is that we did anticipate these types of requests coming through, and depending on the material, we had categorized, you know, more preferable material or would have a larger, would they have a larger sign. They are providing landscaping around the sign, so they need that qualification now that we are requiring that, or will be requiring that in the UDO. So they will be coming close to that standard. I wouldn't say
One thing, y'all know that I'm not in favor of. That makes sense.
That's what they were.
No,
this is a monster sign.
No,
it's smaller than what it was originally proposed.
Right, they have compromised to a point. Bear in mind this on Route 71. This sign sits
right there on the edge.
Well, it sits actually 33. So when you compare it to 71, it's about a foot and a half higher in grade where it's located. In relation to Route 47, it's about 8 feet above grade. So even though this sign is 25 feet tall, it's actually, depending which road you're on, 8 feet higher or 1.5 feet higher than the adjacent grade. Now you go across the street to the other ones. One's actually kind of down, lower up on the hill. So
yeah.
This is a very large sign when you look at it in terms of the elevation that you're looking at. You know, I'm not in favor of it. I get the fact that the state has minimum sizes for the displays of the pricing. But when you take into account height and the rest of it, there are ways you can configure this sign to make it work with it. I'm not in favor of the sign size system. And I will always take that position. That's what I've been since I got onto the Planning and Zoning Commission.
I've always not cared. I've always not cared, so I'll still take that.
Well, usually it's within a small amount, and it's like, why are you for a small amount? But
this is 160 square feet, the other is 130. A
lot of staff time.
They have two signs, there's one here, but they
could turn around. My logic, that the two signs versus one.
They could come in and ask for another sign and think one.
Could we put it in the language that they can only have one sign?
Yeah,
there you go.
It's either that or adjust their sign down.
So, yeah.
Or you can deny the variance.
So I'd say if that's your guys' concern, is I'm putting up a second one, put it in the variance that if we approve this variance, you're only allowed the one sign on the property.
The variance allows us to put that language in.
Oh, yes, the special use would allow you to do it.
Yeah,
especially it's a package deal. So okay. We can.
There you go.
There you go. That works.
Okay.
So is that the recommendation of the committee to pass on to the PCC?
That's mine. That's
Chris?
He's still going to say no.
That is 20 foot tall with only one sign.
Too old. They're asking for 25.
Is that the with that recommendation, it requires three for that recommendation.
Yeah. And then with this council, you can
vote no then.
Yeah.
In order to not stall this in committee, I will break, but just know that this council, this item, I will not be favorable.
So
academic approval.
Yeah,
so can we put it on consent?
Hey, I can pull things from consent, no problem. Now, in terms, there's another item on the in the staff report with regard to the lighting.
Yes.
Has that been resolved?
It has not. It has not been resolved as of today.
What's with the lighting plan?
Our code requires certain types of intensity of light and maximum minimum range. It also requires about the foot candle calculations. They are having trouble with the calculations because of the, I guess they were saying because of the
too intense.
The too intense in certain areas. And because they haven't had any lighting on the other lot, it kind of dilutes it in a way. So we're working with them to get the intensity, the right intensity. It's not going to be an issue of overflow or spillage. It's just a range that the code has on intensity. They are just having a little bit of trouble.
And it's the on-site issue.
Correct.
Because we do not have issues with off-site fleet.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
Just what's within.
It's really around the canopies for the trucks.
Mm-hmm. They're not asking for relief from that as much as we've made the comment and they're working through
still
it.
Still working.
Yeah, they're just, okay.
Yeah.
They're tweaking this, the sighting consultants tweaking it, trying to adjust that.
So it's still outstanding. It'd be a condition of, approval.
Well,
plan approval.
Yeah, it would end up being required by the building department. We wouldn't issue it unless it had
also, the petitioner did state that, following the recommendation of the one sign, I know they would be okay with that.
Okay.
And they also, were trying to mimic their other store here in town as well, 3447. So that's what they were
going on.
Gotcha.
Okay. Hey, anything else for that?
No, Christy, what's the process for this then?
Next step? Again, this is going to the August 10th PCC, and then it will be for the end of August for the city council.
Great.
Okay, item 15. Old Business 1, Urban Chickens. I want to preface this at Tom Bart. I think the next EDC, we want Jason before we vote on this, but we can discuss this ordinance because I know I have questions too. But we thought it was better if all four of us were present for this.
You guys want to talk through the ordinance draft that you did and we'll get tweaked from there?
So, taking in comments from our last several EDC meetings, staff put together the currently proposed regulations. So, we have what was proposed previously that didn't move forward. We tweaked it based off your comments. We have the currently proposed regulations. What we're doing is E1, R1, R2, so no multifamily. When we did a revision of that, we did a map for you to look at the areas. As opposed to 65 parcels being allowed, now we're allowing about 345 parcels. Minimum acreage has reduced from 1 acre to 20,000 square feet. Maximum number of chickens has been reduced from 8 to 5. We are allowing them again only in the rear and side yard, but we reduced the setback from 25 to 15. And then the other change is that
I've got one question here. 20,000. So the light green would not have chickens, right?
No, the light green could, because it's a minimum of 20,000.
So if you went 19,990, would the light green go the other way? If you were hair under the 20,000? Instead, you went 20,000 the other way, 20,000 plus one.
The key is drafted as light green is anything below 20,000. The ordinance is drafted as you have to have 20,000.
Correct. So would you, but in that light green, you capture some lots that are 20,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a different map that is probably not zoning related. It's not zoning coded. It's lot size coded.
Correct.
So
that's the light green.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
So
if you're looking at PDF page 373, that's the one. On that page, the way that the ordinance is drafted currently, it's dark green only, not like
that's that. That's how I understood it,
right?
So what happened from the last meeting, looking through the minutes, we talked about looking at 8,000 to 10,000 square foot lots being the minimum. What brought around 20,000 square feet?
Yeah, I don't know that it was that clear. I'm happy to re-look at the minutes. There were a lot of comments made, and I don't recall anybody saying make it this dollar amount as much as it was.
Make it
come
sure.
up with something, and that's reasonable.
That's what I went back to, is looking, listening to the audio,
yeah.
looking at the minutes.
We have no objection to it being changed, up or down.
Because that's...
But wait a minute, so, let me have, so you're talking 10,000 square feet, that's a quarter of an acre, right?
Yes.
So, you want a lot of chickens on a quarter acre?
My lot.
Okay.
My lot's a 12,000 square foot lot. That's
I got
standard.
One of the big green ones.
Right.
So yeah, I'm over a half, so I don't care.
So, here's the way the chart on page 373. We've identified a few hundred lots that are eligible for chickens. Okay. Even if we go to the 15,000, 20,000 square foot lots, that's, you know, it's 1,000 lots, but then there will be. You have to take the second chart that's in here, the ones that actually have restrictions on them. That's what 374 talk about, is those 20,000 plus, these are the ones that are actually eligible. So it's not going to be 1,064 that are eligible because there's HOAs that have restrictions.
So yeah, what, you want to make it to 10,000?
The whole point of this is to try to make it less restrictive, less government, let people do what they want to do, and government get out of the way. Which, reasonable and responsible is what I said the last meeting. I don't find 20,000 square feet to be reasonable. Okay, it might be responsible, but it's not allowing people to do things responsibly or reasonably with their own property.
Okay, so what do you want to set that?
What's that?
Do you want to set that at 10,000?
He said 8,000.
Well, and that's why I said 8 to 10,000. The exact number on that, but I'm going to go. Look at Oswego's ordinance. They don't set size. They set residential, they exclude multifamily.
Then why don't we just do that?
They set restrictions on where you can place it. You can't put it in the easements. You can't put it so close to someone else. They have a very, what I consider, reasonable ordinance. Up to 6 chickens, no roosters, no slaughtering. It's all pretty well laid out in a page and a half.
Why don't we just copy that?
I would love to.
You can do that. You don't have to have any of the restrictions that we, but the reason why staff proposed this is because of the last, we gave you variance.
Yeah.
Right. Very restrictive.
And yeah,
least restrictive.
Right.
No, I know.
Scenarios.
Well, we went, we built to come all the way down, right?
It's
from 1 acre lot.
And that's where, do I work on a 5,000 square foot lot? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure in some places it would work and people would find. I definitely don't want it on townhomes and multifamily. You know, that's the restriction I would put it to.
I'm fine with copying us, Wiggles.
Yeah. But the one thing on this is...
Can we add goats?
What's that?
Can we add goats?
It's not on the agenda.
We're talking about the thing. Just add it in there. Chickens and goats.
You want to look at me. Look at me.
Yeah.
You want to
I'm already researching how to create a municipal zoo, so...
So Joe, help me out in the old part of town. Where the, what would you say the average size of those lots are?
Oh, I don't know. Mine's big.
Morgan and
Probably quarter acre.
Quarter acre?
I would say, because mine's a double lot and it's an acre and a half.
They're all over the place. So they're 8
to 10 down. They've fallen at 8 to 10 down.
Some of them, yes, some of them, no. They're all over the place.
You got to look at the, okay, so the 0 to 5,000, they're red, okay?
Right.
Keep in mind, orange is 5 to 10. All right. I'm going to pull up the map here and just kind of give you the idea of downtown. So orange was the 5 to 10. So that's south side. There's no red in there, but there is orange and yellow. So you're dealing with...
Yeah, I was looking at it earlier. Yeah.
And then 10 to 15.
And I'm very nervous about them on some of those in town, the old town lines. Just because... We have problems with dogs.
Yeah.
did your
kid have issues?
It's just the south side first.
So how much of them are?
Okay, so there's three of them that are
right.
Five of them, looks like, that are under 5,000 square feet.
So those are probably ones you're concerned about. Which ones are you concerned about?
Jackie's
house.
No, Jackie's actually got a pretty big one.
No, Jackie's got the biggest.
I'm thinking, like, I just can't imagine them on Morgan.
Yeah, see, that's mine, and that's a little over. So that's my house, and that's a little over.
You got a big one.
Right.
Like these, the reds, the under 5,000.
The only blue with the big ones are SSA subdivisions, but it used to be.
So the corner lots are bigger on those.
You all got to make sure everyone hears your conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was saying, so most of the lots that we approve will be residential houses are between 11,000 and 17,000 square feet. The 17,000 are generally the corner lots, the really large corner lots. But the other areas like Grand Street North, we have where it's more of a targeted living environment, those are between 6,600 and then I've seen 7,400 generally. So just as a little bit, the newer subdivisions didn't work out. I'm not sure about the older areas.
Well, that's just all chopped up. The only reason I get that size of a lot is because it's half of it's unbuildable.
And then the other question that I had from this was, we don't talk anything about enforcing it. How does Oswego enforce it? Because I think you're going to have to. John's like, the mayor's like, well, I just don't want to be bothered enforcing it. And I just don't believe that you're going to get away with not having to enforce it.
Oh, we have criteria for enforcement.
But I thought the memo... I didn't see anything about, they said that they were ignoring.
Let me find it. And Oswego did talk about enforcement as well.
So there's a little bit here, but okay, adjudication. I see that.
What page are you looking at?
Huh?
What page are you looking at?
I'm in the top of the memo. Oh, okay, I guess here's what I read. However, no specific direction given regarding enforcement criteria. And so I guess there is something down
there. There is a compliance section in the drafted ordinance that talks about the community development director does. Community shall cause an investigation to be conducted. So there is language in our draft that talked about how you enforce.
It's like a grass violation.
Yeah.
Somebody calls it in, they says this chicken is 6 chickens or something. And then we can go out there and take a look at it, sight of the adjudication.
We don't necessarily aren't paying somebody to go to count chickens.
Never before the hatch either.
Not counting the eggs?
See, if everybody obeyed the rules, it would might not be a bad, right? But the problem is...
They don't obey it now.
Half the people won't. The people will cheat and not obey the rules. And
yeah, so then if once your neighbor gets... ticked off at you, then he calls and you get adjudicated.
Yeah. That's the
heavy
part.
Or if you cheat.
I mean, permit fee can't be exorbitant, but there has to be some type of responsibility. So you're going to find, a lot of people are going to find out, once you have to do a chicken coop, you start running cost. There's a lot of cost to it. I mean, people are going to find out maybe after 6 months it's too expensive for them to actually have it and keep it. So.
I got to talk to Danny because I told him it was 20,000 if we're talking 10,000. I just informed him, so.
It's went up and down, yes and no.
And then, you know, I know River's Edge, since I'm getting that one now, they're going to want to put it in their HOA, and I know
that's it.
they're like, going to put it in their HOA.
I don't care if every HOA does it.
Hmm?
I'll work.
If an HOA hasn't and restricts it, there's nothing we can do.
Right.
I mean, they can restrict what they want as long as they are within the legal confines of what they're restricting.
Then buy a little part of that.
I got another question then. So let's say people in Sunflower decide they don't want it and we manage their HOA. What happens there?
They would have to form their own HOA and take it back over from us.
Huh?
They would have to form their HOA and take it back over from us.
They can't come to us and ask us to put that in the HOA.
I mean, they could, but what are you going to do? You're going to ask all 118 property owners like to vote on it and then majority rules? I mean, like...
No, I just was curious how that works.
No, I would agree with that.
My answer would be like, it's like you live in the middle of the town. If you don't have an HOA, you don't have an HOA.
Because Fox Hill is isolated. Fox Hill, it doesn't pertain to it. It's redded out. So how does it... If you go look at the map, it's redded out, I believe, right?
Because they have an HOA.
Subdivision.
But we do their HOA.
The townhouses have their own HOA.
But the whole thing is outlined as having a...
Covenants.
Subdivision HOA prohibits change. So maybe there is a covenant over the entirety of Fox Hill that has that.
I noticed
that. I thought the town
was. Yeah, we'd have to double check that.
Yeah, we'll double check.
Yeah. But like I can see Cimarron Ridge, Blackberry Woods, but they're going to have restrictions on it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my White neighborhood Oak has an HOA, but we have nothing in there about anything. So it just depends on what neighborhood you're in.
So, I guess at some point we're...
We gotta do something.
So we'll do it in August, right?
That was rhetorical. Joke based on the being back and forth.
Unless there's something else. Now, do you want to change the size? Or what do you want, Chris? You want to...
Honestly, I...
You want to copy Oswego's, you said.
I think Oswego's has been... It's been working. We just check with their staff. Instead of...
I think it'd be easier for staff.
All the lot sizes and everything. Just
hang out.
Yeah, we absolutely can. So right. Just to be clear, I mean, the Oswego ordinance does not have a lot size. So it says you can't do it in multifamily. It's got, you know, context-based rules.
I don't care. So if it's a duplex, if it's a townhome apartment, you can't have it.
That's fine.
I don't want to do that to someone who's an attached property.
Okay. Fine. So is the direction then to have us amend the Oswego ordinance so that it's Yorksville specific for your review?
Wait. Sure.
I'd be comfortable with that.
So what are we taking out Oswego and putting in Yorksville?
Is there anything you want different than Oswego or do you just want it exactly as Oswego?
Shall not be placed so shelters cannot be placed inside any easement. That's for sure. No, shelter cannot be placed within 5 feet of the property line. 5 feet is what we have typically for our accessory structures, but if an easement's there, that supersedes. Shelter's only placed in the rear yard of the property, and whenever it's a side yard, there's the definitions on how that works, so that works. There's nothing in it that I see problematic.
There you go. I thought of it.
Just make sure we have enforcement stated in there. That's all I'd say.
Okay. Do we want?
One thing, Bill, I'd like to add is to make sure that we do have some sort of permitting. Even if you guys don't want to charge for it, it's not
right.
Our place, but we have to have something legally for the city for us to be able to enter the premises. I just wanted to make sure because if we just said, okay, we don't need a permit for it, whatever, then we could never really actually inspect a fenced in yard. Unless I hired all 7 foot tall inspectors, I can see over the fence legally. We can't like stand up and look or do anything like that.
We wouldn't be waiving that though, right?
No, I just wanted to.
Does Oswego?
Yeah.
If they have it still, I just wanted to reinforce that fact that we need.
Right, it has to have an application, it has to have. I like the way that they did this. It talks about what the requirements are, it goes through the actual code, and then it's got the application. It's very simple, formatted the way it needs to be formatted for us.
Okay, so we'll bring that back to the next month's meeting.
Okay. Well, we're going to do that anyhow because for Jason to be here too.
Yes.
All
right. He doesn't care. It's prohibited in his neighborhood.
So I'll just be bringing back an ordinance for your review.
Based on the Oswego ordinance. So none of the prior Yorkville provisions apply and feedback. We're going straight with Oswego. And there should be a discussion as to what's different based on the last proposal.
Okay. Anybody have an idea of a reasonable fee? 35, 50?
Well, we proposed 25 originally.
25
then, yeah, I would say whatever they feel the cost.
I think the staff thinks it's great.
Yeah.
Because
we'll do a calculation based on the amount of time and put it into our reasonable fee. So, yeah, it's we'll figure it out.
Make that.
And if you don't like it, you can change it.
No.
Alright, item 16, OB2, Lisa Pickering Loop, proposed in virtual bike path and monument.
So this is just an update of the Lisa Pickering bicycle loop. We kind of finalized with the assistance of her husband, the 25-mile course. I put a link in there for you for the experience, so if you guys got a chance to take a look. Just as a courtesy, we contacted, since a lot of the route is on different roadways and through different neighborhoods, we contacted HOAs, jurisdictions of the roadways to say, listen, we're going to be promoting this bicycle path. It's not technically a path all the way through Yorkville. Just as a courtesy, we did not receive any negative feedback about it. We don't expect this to create thousands and thousands of bikers, but we are going to be promoting it. We're still determining the placement of the monument pillar. Hopefully to have a QR code on it to scan and show you what the route is so that other people can do the route. And we're just looking for feedback from DC for publishing. We will be creating a web page on our website and have a link there for this for the loop. So if you have any comments or additions or anything like that, we'd love to hear it.
I like it. So at 747, the state owns a property on the southwest corner.
Mm-hmm.
Would they possibly be accommodating for a monument there? It's an unused piece of property, will always be unused. We might have to take over the mowing obligations.
Yeah.
I think that's, Parks and Rec has already identified and approved a location for the monument.
They did discuss this at a previous park board meeting.
Do you know where it was?
Beecher Park. I have it down as Beecher, along Beecher Park.
Beecher Park. Okay. Okay. Well, we'll review that against where they've got the plan and talk about it and let you know if we decide to change it. So it'd be more visible. Yeah,
location.
For sure.
Yeah. And it was Salmonok and?
Salmonok and 47.
Yeah, it's a southwest corner.
Yeah. The state's got a piece of property there.
Good thought. Is there any additional business?
Just go.
Can we adjourn?
Cool. Thank you.
Just go.
Huh?
Just go.
Go.
Was that on next month?